Hey right. there, Wes. What's up, brother?
Not a whole lot. We got a great one today, Randy.
I'll tell you what. Do we? I mean, you know, we talk about this often, and we say it often, but how we keep getting great guests. And it, just when we think, okay, there can't possibly be anybody else, then we get people like Oak that comes along. And it's brilliantly fun. And it makes us look good because, you know, we'll just let Oak talk and we'll sit back and pretend like we know something, right?
Yeah, and we can tell people this is not going to be a Balsa interview. This is Oak.
Oh, that's good. Not really, but okay.
Well, they can't all be good, you know. Well,
that's true. That's not bad, though. But, yeah, I'm excited, and we'll talk about, but, you know, we talked with Oak just a couple minutes ago off here, and I love the military, as you know. We both do. And Oak is a retired lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army, and we're going to talk a lot about that and leadership and, you know, it's always good to have some good old God bless American warriors on the show, right?
I couldn't agree more. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have the freedoms that we love.
Exactly. And you and I are doing what we love and loving what we do, just like this today. And it's all because of people like Oak, people under his command, people before him, people current, people after, right? And,
absolutely.
If we forget that, then we're not very good thinkers, right?
Couldn't agree more.
All right. So. Well, we could talk for 20 or Oaks. We have a very cheap green room, so we have no grapes, no vino, no crackers, nothing in the green room for Oaks. So we should probably just quit talking and bring him on. What do you think?
Let's just bring him on.
Yeah, let's just do it.
All right.
You're looking good today, though. By the way.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You know, I mean, I like the non-goateed face. I don't know if I like it, but I'm getting used to it.
Yeah. You know, it works for the CPAP better. So that's all
there.
Good.
You go. All right, buddy. Let's go.
Welcome to Building Wins Live with host, the hybrid road warrior himself, Randy Chafee, and producer-director, Wes Wyatt.
Whether we're talking about sales, marketing, tech, or industry news, we want to bring you the best tips, tricks, and info to build wins.
Now, let's get to the show.
Good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
You know, it could not be better. Could not be better. It's been a great day, great week, and it's winding down. And we're going into one of those great, great, great weekends, aren't we?
I always enjoy the 4th of July. I mean, that's what this country is all about. That holiday is one of my favorites. And got some plans with grandkids and my wife's mother, and we're going to have a good time.
Good, good. Well, you've got it up there, but retired lieutenant colonel.
Yeah.
Oakland Oak McCullough. Yeah, that sounds good. That just sounds like a lieutenant colonel, right? It sounds. So was Oak, was that your, not only in the Air Force, they have their little name on the plane, but was that like your little slogan or whatever in the military or no? Was you known as Oak?
No.
It's probably sir.
I go by Oak. All my friends call me Oak.
Okay.
My full first name is Oakland, but everybody calls me Oak.
Yeah. Well, and then, of course, yeah, call sign. There you go. See, Wes is right there. The call sign, that's what I was looking for. Maverick. Yeah. I should have watched the movie, then I'd had it. But yeah. but probably as a lieutenant colonel, most of it was probably sir. But,
yeah. Or colonel.
Yep. Perfect. Well, welcome. And first and foremost, thank you for your service to the country.
Thank you, Randy. I appreciate that.
Well, as we talked off screen, and I'm going to say it again, Wes and I talk a lot, and a mantra that we use a lot is that love what we do, do what we love, and we get to do that every day. And I work a lot, but I work zero because I'm blessed to live in a country and to be able to make my own way and do what I want to do, how I want to do it, when I want to do it. And it's not lost on me that it's people like you, people that's been under your command, and way back in the beginning of time, now, currently, and in the future. That's why we get to do this. So
That's right.
I don't think we want to ever forget that. So thank you again.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Oh, yeah. You know, I tell people all the time, I loved every minute of my 23 years on active duty. I'd do it all over again. And it really is. It was about service to the people and to the country. And that's why I would do it all over again.
Awesome. Love it. So how did you, let's start there. Who is Oak McCullough? Where are you from? Give us a little background of where you are and maybe how did you get the calling to serve your country like you did?
Yeah, well, thanks. So I grew up in Northern Illinois, which is why I live in Florida now, because I'm never living somewhere like that again.
Exactly.
Played baseball, basketball, football in high school, went off to the United States Military Academy for a couple years, played baseball there. Then I came home, helped my father run his business for a couple years. And then I finished up in ROTC, where I met my wife, because she was an Army nurse as well. Okay. And I met my wife there at in ROTC at Northern Illinois University, graduated from there, got commissioned as a second lieutenant in the United States Army as an infantry officer, did my first 5 years in the infantry. And then I switched over and did my last 18 years as an armored cavalry officer. My last duty assignment, I ran an Army ROTC program at the University of South Alabama in Mobile. And then when I retired in 2009, I ran the day-to-day operations of a food bank there in Mobile that covered 52 counties across Mississippi, Alabama, and in the panhandle of Florida. And I took over that just about a month and a half before the BP oil spill. So I was a little bit busy during my time there.
Oh, I'll bet.
And then they offered me to come here to Daytona Beach, Florida, and do recruiting for Army ROTC. And I jumped on that opportunity. And I'm going to do that. I've been doing that for about 12 years now, almost 13. And retiring on 1 October, I'll write my second book and just want to concentrate on speaking engagements.
Love it. Love it. So let's talk about that, since that's a great segue. We almost sound like we practiced that one. Yeah. Your book, your leadership legacy. Did I get that correct?
That is right.
So tell me about the book. And obviously, I'm assuming tell us where people can get it and all those kind of. There it is. Look at it, just like that. And it's popped up.
Right. Love the
hat too. That's your cavalry hat, isn't it?
That's right. That's the hat. Yeah. So I tell people, look, in my book, there is no talk about theory. I don't talk about theory whatsoever, nor do I when I talk about, you know, on my speaking engagements. I talk about everyday things that every leader can do to improve their leadership ability and skills and improve the people and the organization that they have a privilege to lead. And it is a privilege to lead them. So it is, you know, just a dumb farm boy here. You got to keep things simple for me. And, you know, when I wrote it, I really thought in my mind, I was writing it for aspiring leaders, young leaders. And I think I did that. And if you read the reviews on Amazon, I think I hit that. But the other thing that I found out was I had a 2-star Marine Corps general who read it and just found me on LinkedIn, sent me a message saying, "Oak, you know, I didn't learn a whole lot of new things. I learned a few new techniques, how to do things." He said, "But what I really took out of it was, as I was reading along, I'd come across something and I'd say to myself, you know, I used to do that really well, and I don't do that so well anymore. Maybe I need to dedicate some time and effort to get back to doing that well again." Because I don't care how long you've been a leader, you can always learn something, and we all need that little nudge to get back to doing what it is that made us a good leader.
Right. Well, it's easy to forget the little things, right? That, like you just said, that made you a good leader. But after you've done it so long, you need a reminder, because somebody once said that everything that's ever been, ever's going to be written has already been wrote. That's a little bad English. And they probably said it better, but it's just a matter of reminding ourselves and retelling it in a way that it makes sense, that people can grasp what you're trying to say. Right.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, there's plenty of books out there on leadership theory and, you know, how to think about leadership and all that. And I just wanted to use some principles that I think are timeless leadership principles. And then I use personal stories that kind of emphasize why those principles are important and the impact that they have on the people that you have the privilege to lead.
You know, you used the word twice. And so I'd really like to hear a little bit more about that. You use the word privilege, because so many leaders feel like almost the opposite, right?
Yeah.
And you've used that twice, so I want to go back to that. Why and how do you look at it as a privilege to lead? What's that? Why is that? I'm interested in your thoughts on that.
So I'm a firm believer, a huge believer, that the best leaders are servant leaders. And it's not about you. And when I talk about leadership, either in books, in my book, or at speaking engagements or on podcasts, I always tell people, look, it's not about you and it's all about you. It's not about you and the title you're going to get or the privileges you get or the better that you get better pay and you get to live in a nicer house and drive a nicer car. Let's face it, leaders get that kind of stuff sometimes, and that's okay, as long as that's not the only reason you want to be a leader. If that's the only reason you want to be the leader, go do something else. You're never going to be a good one. It's all about you and how you treat the people that you are leading and how you run the organization that you are going to lead. And I remind these young lieutenants, this year we commissioned 62 lieutenants out of our ROTC program here.
Oh, wow.
And I tell every one of them the day that they get commissioned, I say, look, celebrate today, because today is all about you. You get to do something that very few people in this country get to do. You get to become an officer in the United States Army. But just remember this, that today after we pin those bars on your shoulder and you go out tomorrow as a second lieutenant, a leader, it will never be about you ever again. It's about the people that you get to lead. It's about the mission. It's about the organization. It's about the Army. It's about the country. And then if we have time, we might talk about you maybe.
That's amazing. And to hear it that way, because having been around a few military people in my life, that's a bearing that they all carry, some to lesser degree than others. But I think it's spot on. I don't think you can ever lead without being responsible for and caring for the development of your people, right?
That's number one. I mean, to me, there's a couple have to do things as a leader. You have to have a vision and a plan. You got to develop culture. But to me, the number one thing is taking care of people. And I've had some good bosses, some good leaders in the Army who have taught me that. I had some bad leaders as well. You know, those authoritarian, micromanaging, do it as I tell you to do it. We've all had those leaders and nobody likes to work for them. But I've had some great leaders who ended up being my mentor or mentors, and who were servant leaders who really drove home that the number one thing you got to do is take care of the people that you're leading. Because in the end, leadership is about people. It's not about flow charts. It's not about organizational charts. It's about people. And they have to trust you if they're going to follow you. And so you got to build that trust. And the way you build that trust is you take care of people.
So you want to develop a synergy where they follow you because they believe in you and they trust in you and they want to, as opposed to the fact that, let's face it, anybody under you, especially in a military or the police departments or those kind of things, you can just directly order somebody to follow you. Or there's penalties if you don't, right?
Right.
But that's not the reason for them to follow you. The reason for them to follow you is because they trust and believe in Oat McCullough, right? That's the important part.
Absolutely. I think here's the difference. They will follow you if they don't trust you, if they have to, but they're not going to do anything more than what they absolutely have to do. If they trust you, they will follow you wherever you want to go and do whatever you ask them to do. And I've seen it in the military. You know, when you get people, when you have people's lives in your hands and they're still willing to do the things you're asking them to do, it's because they trust you. Right. That's plain and simple.
Well, and exactly why there's probably no better training ground than the military for leaders, because in the business world, it affects maybe nothing more than the balance sheet today, right? The P&L. You're talking young people's lives and their families' lives. So it puts a whole different responsibility level on the leader, right?
It does. And that trust piece is so important. I tell people, you know, it's easy to build trust. Doing it is the hard piece. I mean, the things that you got to do to build that trust is easy. You know, live with integrity and character, set the example every day in everything you do, get to know the people who you have the privilege to lead. And That I tell people, there's a couple easy ways to do that. Number one, lead by walking around. Nobody wants to follow somebody who's behind a desk. Now I got it. Leaders have to be behind a desk every once in a while. Mm-hmm. There's paperwork you got to do. There's things like that. But when you have the opportunity, get out from behind your desk and just walk around and talk to people. Get to know the people that you get to lead. And there's a couple easy ways to do that. Number one is go where they are. So go find them and ask them questions, talk to them where they are. And so I tell every single lieutenant, every single person I talk about leadership, I say, an easy way to do that is go out and find one person every day in your organization and find out one new thing about that person. Just one. One person, one new thing every day. Not about work, about their personal life, their spouse's name, their kid's name, what sports do their kids play. And an easy way to do that, I had a three-star general. He retired a three-star general, and he was one of my mentors. And he told me one day, he said, "Oak, never, ever, ever turn down a chance to go get your own cup of coffee. I don't care how high up you get, go get your own cup of coffee." He said, two things happen when you do that. Number one, you show everybody that you're no better than they are. You got to go get your own cup of coffee just like they do. And number two, if you're lucky, you got two or three different ways to get to the coffee pot and back to your office. And along the way, you stop and talk to people.
Right. That's get your own cup. That's a great quote right there. Get your own cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I love that.
I wish I could take credit for that, but I can't.
Well, hey, yeah, nobody here knows. Go ahead. That's awesome. So the as you started making speeches and started and wrote your book, let's transverse a little bit more into the world of business now. And when you do make a speech or when you coach or train or help a business, what's that look like? How do you, because it's not a military operation, so it's probably not the same. I give you an order and you just shut up and do it, right? Yeah. It's a little different atmosphere. So how do you mold that together? Because I can tell with you, you're a very personable person, but is that easy to make that transition from military to business and leadership standpoint?
I think leadership skills absolutely transfer. I don't care where you learn them, don't care where you practiced them, because again, it's about people. Mm-hmm. I tell people all the time, look, I know nothing about a hospital. I try to stay away from hospitals. There's mean people in there trying to do mean things to me. I don't know anything about a hospital. But if you put me in charge of a hospital tomorrow, I promise you I could lead it because I know how to lead people. Now, those principles of leadership don't change. You know, there are certain things you have to do: integrity, character, communication, building trust, building a team. Those kind of things don't change. How you put it as across to people will change depending on what organization you're leading. You know, an example I use is when I wanted to motivate my soldiers, that was easy. We support and defend the Constitution of the United States. We defend the American way of life. We fight and win our nation's wars. Let's go. Motivated. No problem motivating young men and women doing that. That didn't work at the food bank. Go figure. You know, so I had to come up with what it was that motivated them. And one of the things that I tell people is the way to motivate people, first, you got to give them a sense of purpose, because everybody wants a sense of purpose in everything we do, whether it's our personal relationships, our job, our hobbies, whatever. We want a sense of purpose. That's what motivates people, not money, fame, all that stuff. And an easy way to do that, to figure out what that sense of purpose is in your organization, is to figure out what it is that makes your organization unique. At the food bank, that I struggled a little bit with that. I mean, in the Army, that was easy. At the food bank, until one day we were in a meeting and we were planning out the largest food handout that we did every year. And we were about 3 weeks away from it. And I got all my people in there and we're talking about it, we're planning it. And about 4 o'clock, I saw people starting to close their books, starting to put stuff away. And I was like, what are you doing? And they said, well, it's 4 o'clock. It's time to go home. And I said, but we're not done. And they said, but it's 4 o'clock. It's time to go home. I said, okay, fine. If you want to leave, leave. I said, but before you leave, let me make one thing very clear to you. 3 weeks from now, when we're handing out food and some 19-year-old unmarried young lady has to go home and can't feed her 2-year-old daughter because we didn't get this right it's your fault. How many people you think left?
Probably zero, I'm guessing.
Zero.
that was a virtual shot right between the eyes, wasn't it? Wake up call.
I figured out that they really were there to help other people. They just needed a reminder every now and again, just like we do, and it's like everybody does. But once I reminded them what the reason they were there for, then I figured it out. They really did want to be there for that. That's probably why they joined that organization in the first place.
Well, exactly.
They didn't have a choice.
Right. They joined it for a purpose and probably lost sight of the purpose a little bit with all of the day-to-day stuff, whatever that is.
Yeah, and got into overcome. You get overcome by events. You get overcome by family issues, health issues, whatever it is. And every once in a while, you just need to have a reminder of what it is that why you're doing what you do. And like you said, you know, if you love what you do, then if you got that passion, then you never really work.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and it sounds like you very easily reminded them of the why, right? Their why was not a place to come into work every day. Their why was to help people. That's obviously, that's what they wanted to do. Or because at a food bank, I'm only guessing, but there's probably more profitable places to work as an employee, right?
Absolutely. We weren't paying them a whole lot of money.
Right. So you're not doing it for the money or the big car or the house on the corner, right? You're doing it to help people. And it sounds like you reminded them of the why. And once you reminded them, none of them left, which meant they knew they had the why.
That's right.
They just needed a gentle reminder. And I think people become very habitual too, right? And it's easy to always do what you always did, right? And
absolutely.
It's like I see that a lot. I focus a lot and try to focus on living as healthy and fit lifestyle as I can. And I'm a faster. I like to fast 16, 18 hours a day almost always.
I eat one meal a day.
Yep, there you go. And the funny thing to me is when I see people, what are you going to do? We're going to go to lunch. Well, why are we going to lunch? Because it's lunchtime. But are you hungry? I mean, are you famished right now? Well, no, but that's what we do. Well, I don't, because I eat when I have some rules I set for myself, right?
Right.
But I, the benefits that I feel that I obtain from living that lifestyle exceeds my desire to just eat because it's noon and it's fun to eat, right?
Well, so, we are all creatures of habit.
Right.
And anybody who tells you they're not is lying to you. And to themselves, because we are. I don't care if remember how you put your shoes on today, because I promise you put your shoes on the same way every single day. When you shave, you shave the exact same way.
Exactly.
We are creatures of habit. And that's a good thing, because that allows our minds, frees our minds up to deal with the things that we have to think about. So but having said that, you have to develop good habits. And that's one of the things that is very tough to do, because we get into bad habits and bad habits are hard to break. It takes a conscious decision to decide that you're going to change a habit. It can be done, but it takes a decision to do it.
Right. But what do you find that once you become habitual with good things, it's somewhat hard to not continue doing the good thing just as well as the bad thing, even though probably generally speaking, bad habits are easier to fall into and harder to get out of because they probably tend to be the more fun things.
That's right.
It's more fun to eat three times a day or eight times a day.
Yeah.
But that's not maybe the best thing.
Yeah. So I'm a huge believer in routines inside of routines. So I think the more you do things exactly the same every single time you do them, you develop that habit. And again, if you're thinking about it and you want to develop good habits, then you're going to do that. You know, I start my day exactly and in my day exactly the same every single day that I can. I mean, there's times when you can, I got it. But when I can, I get up, I light my candle in my living room, I sit in my chair and I read. I listen to the daily mass. I read a chapter of the Bible and I say my prayers every morning. That's my routine. When I go to bed at night, before I go to bed at night, I try to read 10 pages of whatever book I'm reading. I write in my journal because I've kept a journal since I was in about the fifth grade. And then I reflect on the day. What did I do well? How could I do it better? What didn't I do so well? Why? And how can I do that better? So I think if you can get into routines, that will help you develop those good habits that you need.
And, you know, speaking of that, I think I found also that as you develop the habits, once it becomes a habit that you know you need to do, that's a force multiplier in what you can accomplish, because now I don't have to waste thought and energy to do this because I just habitually just automatically do it, right?
Absolutely.
Which opens up my mind or my abilities, my whatever to do the other things that pop up that were not part of my habit, if you will.
Yeah, I agree. And it kind of develops that self-discipline that you need. And we all need self-discipline.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to be successful, you got to have some self-discipline. And I tell people the reason you got to have self-discipline is because we like to think that we're going to get up every morning, we're going to be motivated to do the things that we need to do. But that's not called the real world. That's fantasy land. We're not motivated every day to do the things that we should do. And those days when you're not motivated, your self-discipline will make you do the things that you would have done if you were motivated.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I'm sure you probably have read some of it. I'm a fan of Jocko, and he talks about that a lot, right? You know, he'll say it a little bit more flowery than I'll say it, but motivation is BS. I mean, that's almost meaningless because we all have some motivations, but if you don't have the disciplines, I don't care how motivated you are. I'm pretty motivated to live a healthy lifestyle, like I said. But if you put a big bowl of chili and cheese in front of me that I didn't ask for, it takes discipline to not eat it.
It does.
Because I can guarantee you I'm motivated to eat it, right?
Oh, absolutely. And
there's a big difference, right?
Absolutely. Self-discipline is huge. And there is a difference between self-discipline and discipline. Discipline is me standing over top of you telling you, okay, Randy, don't eat that. Mm-hmm. Self-discipline is you say to yourself, yeah, that I would love to eat that, but it's not good for me. It's not in my diet. It's not whatever. And that's the difference, is the self-discipline. You impose it on yourself. And we all, good leaders, successful people, whether they're leaders or not, I promise you they have self-discipline.
Right. So how successful can somebody that's not a leader per se, but you still are a leader because you're going to lead your family, you're going to lead your little league baseball team, you're going to lead something. If nothing else, you're going to lead yourself, right?
That's right. It starts with you.
It does. So how trainable is an individual to become a self-leader, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. I get asked that every once in a while. You know, the question usually is, are leaders born or are they developed? And I think that there's a combination. And if you don't believe me, go out there this weekend to a soccer game with a bunch of 5-10-year-olds.
I know where you're going with this.
You can find out who the leader is. Nobody appointed him or her as the leader, but everybody's following that 5 or 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. So there are some people that are born with some leadership skills that are inherent. I believe that. However, I do believe that you can train. If somebody wants to become a leader, they can become a leader. They can learn the things that they need to learn and do the things that they need to do. And I give you an example. When I took over the ROTC program, where I was producing leaders, second lieutenants, leaders for the Army and for the nation, I had a young man who showed up right after I took over, And first day, I was like, yeah, this young man's never going to make it. And he kept coming. He came to PT. He came to class. He asked questions. He did all the things we asked him to do. Still wasn't clicking. One day, I think it was the second semester of his sophomore year, I saw the light bulb go off in his head. And you could just tell that all those things that we had done, he finally understood what we were doing, why we were doing them, and how he had to do them. That young man ended up being the battalion commander, the number one cadet in my program. And now he's on the lieutenant colonel's list. He gets promoted later on this year to lieutenant.
Really?
You don't think that makes me feel old, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. but also proud because you saw that and you worked with him and you stayed with him. And you know, it's that's a great story. That's a great story.
You know, because it again, it's about people. Now, you know, as the leader, at some point, you got to say, okay, young man or young lady, this probably isn't the right track for you, if it really isn't. But you got to give people an opportunity. You know, growing up, my father had this thing called the 75% rule. And he used to tell me, son, if you can't do something better than 75% of the people doing it, then you got to do one of two things. You either need to figure out how to get better at it, or you need to go find something else to do, because obviously it doesn't matter to you. Now, are you going to be doing something better than 75% of the people when you start doing it? Probably not. Very few people can do that.
Right.
But you got to, every day, you got to get a little bit better at it and work at it so that you, eventually you are in that top. Because in the real world, as you know, results do matter.
Right.
You know, in fantasy land where everybody's a winner and everybody gets a trophy, maybe not. But in the real world, results matter. So you need to have that desire to be the best at whatever it is you do. And that's what my father was trying to tell me. And one of the things that I picked up on, and I use it all the time, that you want to be the best at whatever you do. I want to win all the time. I don't care what I'm doing. I don't care if I'm playing old maid with my 9-year-old granddaughter. I want to win.
Right.
And if you don't want to win, I don't want you on my team.
Exactly. Exactly. I love that concept, because you want people that demand from themselves and desire to be that winner.
That's right.
Now, you have to learn how to, unfortunately, lose
absolutely
when you don't, right? Because that's part of society. That's part of just life.
That's
but
right.
That doesn't mean you just accept it as, oh, well, some people win, some people lose.
Yeah.
No, you go, why did I lose? Again, old age, you're probably not going to analyze a lot, but a lot of things in life, you got to go back and say, okay, I lost. That's, you know, you punch a wall or you kick a stone, and then you go, okay, what happened and why, what could I do different? Because I hate that feeling. Because the problem, I think, for anybody, leadership or not, but if you want to be successful, if you are, that's okay, I lost, whatever.
Yeah.
You're never going to be successful with that attitude. No, it doesn't mean you get mad. You don't go hitting people. You don't quit every time something doesn't work right. But boy, you better be bothered by the fact that somewhere I didn't win, because that should be the goal. And that's what, part of the reason why our podcast here is called Building Wins, because I believe you should always be building wins, whatever that win is. And I love the way you hit it with your granddaughter and old maid. You should want that desire to win.
Well, you know, one of the lessons I taught her was, and I told her right from the beginning, I said, look, I am not going to let you win. So when you beat me, you know you won. You know, I have a good friend who was a head football coach at a couple of schools, and now he's the president of a university. And he told me one day, he said, you know, your reaction to a win should be the same as a reaction to a loss. How do I get better? Because even if you won, you can still get better.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what you did. How did you do it? What was the end result? But how could I get even better than that?
Right.
And if you live life that way, you're always looking to get a little bit better. I don't care how good you are. You can always be a little bit better. And Vince Lombardi put it perfectly. He said, the goal is to always want to win. You're not always going to win, but you should always want to win.
Exactly.
Have that desire to win. That's the key.
It is. And, you know, staying with the sports analogy real quick, you know, a lot of times, I'm a big University of Michigan football fan, and I don't care who the coach is. It could be Alabama, anybody. You win games sometimes just out of sheer talent. You're just much better.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean, okay, you won, but you see, you know, what's the coach a lot of times talk about after the game? Yeah, we got the win, but man, we got to work on this and this and this. We didn't execute here. If we were playing Alabama, they'd have killed us if we'd have played that way. You know, so there's always, even like you said, even with that win, they're still focusing on, I remember Tom Izzo, basketball coach for Michigan State University. He's highly successful. Love the guy. Even though I'm a Michigan fan, I still love him. But he says, you know, after you win a game in the NCAA tournament, he says, we're gonna celebrate, we're gonna high five each other, and we're gonna dance around, but then we gotta go back to work tomorrow because we got another game in 2 days, right?
That's right.
And I think that's the key factor is you always got to be looking for that next win and how do we get there?
Oh, absolutely. I love that. You know, I was a pretty decent baseball player. I played baseball in my life, including at the college level. And I always tell people this, and again, my father was a mean old man. I am who I am today because of him. There's no doubt about it. But all the years he watched me play baseball, I can only remember one time he ever told me I played a good game.
Really?
I was a pitcher that game. I threw a one hitter and I went 4-for-4 with a home run. And he told me I played a good game. He would tell me other times, hey, you did okay, but you were having problems. I could tell you were having problems with the balls hit to your right. And he'd take me out after the game and he hit me 50 balls going to my right. Mm-hmm. Or to the left, or whatever it was that I was having problems with. Or if I pitched a game, he could tell I was having problems with something. He'd make me throw that over and over again. And I took that not as something bad. I took that as a challenge. Okay. Right. And I can tell you, the day he told me I played a good game, that was a happy day.
Big day. Oh, man, that's awesome. I want to, when we finish up in a couple minutes, you've been very kind with your time. I want to make sure everybody knows how to find your book. But this, I just made a note because it popped in my head again as we're talking. We all hopefully can recognize, or leaders help us recognize, our weaknesses and our strengths, right?
That's right.
And maybe there's no right answer to this, but what's Oak's answer to what's the most important to work on? Probably both, but if I can work on something today, should I work to take my strengths and get stronger? Should I work on my weaknesses to get stronger and to be less weak in that area? Or are they equal? Because that's always a conversation I've had with people.
Yeah. So I think it really depends on where you are as a leader. If you are a really good leader already, then I think you work on your weaknesses to make you even a better leader. Mm-hmm. If you're average leader, then maybe you work on your strengths to make yourself, to get you to that point where you're even better. And then you can work on the weaknesses, as long as those weaknesses aren't character weaknesses. And at that point, I'm not sure that that's fixable. Certainly that's right. With the organization that you had your character flaw with, right. Because once that trust is gone, it's gone. I mean, it's almost impossible to get back. So I think they're both important. But I think if you got to push more emphasis on one, I think you're always trying to get better. And that can be your strength to make it even better than it is. But I think it really does depend on where you are in that leadership equation.
Makes sense. Well, Wes just had your book up on the screen there. So it's available how? How do we get a hold of your book?
Yeah. So you can go either to my website, which is on the bottom there, and there's a tab there that says book sales, and you can go or click on that and it'll take you to the Amazon site. And the book is available on hardcover, paperback, ebook, and Audible. I read the Audible book. The only The only other voice on there is my wife. She read the foreword because she wrote it and she read the about the author. Everything else I read. And I wasn't going to do it. I was going to pay somebody to do it. And the guy that I was going to pay to do it, who had a fantastic voice, would have done a great job. He said, you know, Oak, I'll do it for you if you want to pay me to do it. He said, but let me just give you this piece of advice. When I'm looking to buy an audio book, if the guy or gal who wrote it isn't reading it, I go to the next one.
That's fair. I would certainly put a lot more credibility, or maybe not credibility, but interest in reading the book or buying the audio if it's read by the author. To me, that would be kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Because I never even thought of it that way, but I probably agree with him as well.
Yeah. Well, I think part of that too is even a good professional, a reader would probably do a great job, but the nuances, the tone to things that are important, they're never going to know what was important to you.
Yeah. The passion. Come out.
Right. Yeah. When you got something to talk about that you, Oak McCullough, want Randy to know when he listens, you're going to get that to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's just another word of pretty nice stuff, but just, you know, if I'm reading it, that's pretty nice. Yeah, that's interesting. But as a paid reader, you're not going to have the passion for it. So,
yeah,
well, beautiful.
I agree.
Well, Oak, this has been way better even than I thought it would be, and I knew it'd be brilliant. So I don't know if Wes was keeping count, but I stopped because I didn't want to feel I didn't want you to think I'm doing crossword puzzles, which I don't because they bore me. But I think I lost count at about 12 golden nuggets of great stuff already just in the conversation. So it was good stuff, my friend.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you having me on the show, Randy. I really do.
You know what? It was so good, actually, that you make the short list of somebody that I think we'll invite back someday if you'd be so kind.
I would love to. And maybe after I write my second book, which I will start on 1 October once I retire from my day job here, I want to start my second book on how to be successful.
Love it.
And so I'd love to come back on.
You have a spot. As soon as you're ready and you want to announce the book, you let me know much in advance and we'll find a spot. How's that?
Sounds good, Randy.
Done deal. All right, my friend, Lieutenant Colonel, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
All right. You got it. See you, Oak. All right, folks. Like I said, I literally have got like 15 golden nuggets. Just not really wrote down, but a little reminder, shorthand, Randy shorthand, which I won't be able to read later, but that's a different story. Wes knows how to read Randy, so he'll fill me in. But brilliant stuff. Great stuff, as I knew it was. Just proud to have Oak on today. And as always, remember, we talk about it today, and it's even more applicable, whew, it's easy to say, today with having somebody that's fought for our country. You know I love what I do what I love. I live it, love it, own it every single day. Take that with you. And remember, go make today your best day ever until tomorrow. Let's go. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to Building Wins Live.
You can find information on Randy, Wes, our guests, show notes, and anything related to the podcast at buildingwins.live. On behalf of the whole Building Wins team, don't forget, make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow.